Hi, this is Alonzo Bowden. I want to welcome you to episode 230 of my podcast, Who's Paying Attention? And yeah, I know it's been a while. You don't have to tell me. It's been about a week and a half. There's been a lot going on. Obviously, there's a lot to talk about. Before I get into that, I want to give a shout out to a few comics and a few friends and people you may or may not know about that you should probably check out. Chris D'Elia, I love this guy. Chris D'Elia is a comic and a buddy of mine, and we bump into each other in the most random places. Most recently, we crossed paths in Vancouver's airport, which I'll tell you a story about that travel day. But Chris is a very funny, super high energy comic actor. He's had a couple of sitcoms and he's popped up in some movies and he's got a great career. But Chris is one of those guys. This is the way I could describe him. He's one of those guys that every man loves him. No, woo, that was backwards. Women love him and men want to be his friend. He's that kind of guy. Great energy. Really funny. Check him out. Check out Chris D'Elia. He said something about me on his podcast that I loved. He said, if the whole world had a fight, I would come in 17th. I take that as pretty high praise. I don't think I'd crack the top 20, but I appreciate the comment. So Chris D'Elia is one. Another comic buddy of mine who is, you know, not nearly as famous as I think he deserves is Maranzio Vance. Now, we in the comedy world joke about Maranzio's anger, but he's not really angry. Maranzio just holds high standards to everything. Even if you don't see him, look him up on Facebook. Maranzio, very opinionated, very smart, very funny, from hip-hop to movies to comic books to comedy to anything he talks about, he has an opinion. But it's not just talking shit. It's an informed opinion. He'll give you the reasons he believes what he believes, and he makes it funny. So I got to give a shout out to Maranzio, and hopefully we'll be working together on something coming up very soon. So yeah, I wanted to give a shout out to those two guys because they're funny and they're cool and they're my friends. You know, my best friends, it seems, are people I laugh with. You know, is that true? Is that true for you also? Something about people who really make you laugh are good friends and fun to hang out with. And I just happen to be lucky enough as a comic to have some of the funniest people in the world on my list. You know, guys like George Wallace. George never doesn't make me laugh. If you are not following George Wallace on Twitter, pause this podcast, go to Twitter and start following George Wallace and whatnot and so forth. The funniest guy on Twitter. There's no other description. Dom Herrera, one of the old masters of this art, who I love and is a good friend and very funny. And this week, right now, I'm at Brad Garrett's Comedy Club in Vegas. Yeah, I'm recording this podcast in my room in Vegas. It's 5 minutes to 1 a.m. I'm alone, no hookers, no drugs, no alcohol, ain't been gambling, although I did lose like 10 bucks in a penny slot machine in honor of Mom, because Mom always played penny slots, so it's time I took over that mantle. So am I doing Vegas wrong? I don't know. I did buy some shoes. Does that count? Is that a vice? I don't know. So that's where I am, and that's what I'm doing, and it's all good. I am spending a lot of time on stage and writing. I'm getting ready to record my next special. I can't tell you too much about it other than we will be recording in Glendale, which is a suburb of Los Angeles, at the Alex Theater. The Alex Theater has a lot of history for me. It's one of the theaters from Last Comic Standing. I've done great fundraisers and big shows there. We're going to record the special December 3rd. If you are anywhere in the Southern California area, December 3rd, it will be free because it's a TV taping and we want to pack the place. So just mark your calendar, December 3rd, the Alex Theater in Glendale. I'll have more information as the date gets closer. I'll have links to get the tickets up on my website and Facebook page and et cetera, et cetera. But that's what I'm working on right now. So just trying to do a lot of new material. And it's not easy to stay ahead of reality. That's all I can tell you. I am expected to come up with a comedic reality funnier than the reality we live in. And just, you know, my favorite news story with everything going on, with all the insanity, and I'm going to get into the insanity in the news, but my current favorite news story I read last week, it happened in Tennessee. The headline got me. Man run over by lawnmower while chasing his son with a chainsaw. And we're living in a cartoon. That is out of a Tom and Jerry or old Bugs Bunny, you know, back when cartoons were violent the way they were supposed to be. That's something you'd see. You'd see one character with a chainsaw chasing another guy driving a lawnmower, and somehow the lawnmower would turn around and run over the chainsaw guy. That's real now. Tough to beat on the comedy stage. But anyway, that's it, and that's how I get started. You know, I'm telling you who I am and what's going on. That's where we're at. Now let's get into the podcast. Who's paying attention? You are. You guys are great. There's some things in the news that I hear that just hit me. So I heard this story. I heard it while I was driving here to Vegas. But a 9-year-old girl, Peyton Summons, she has cancer, had cancer. She's passed away. She died last Friday. But she was taken to the hospital, Cook Children's Hospital. I guess it's in Fort Worth, Texas. And she had this tumor in her chest that basically, the tumor was between her heart and her lungs, and it stopped her from breathing. Okay. It's a horrible thing to deal with, you know. So anyway, she was declared brain dead by medical professionals when she got to the within a day of getting to the hospital. And the hospital wanted to take her off of life support and allow her to die. Now, that's the important thing. The hospital wanted to do it. The parents wanted to keep her on the ventilator. So the parents had to go to court. They sued. They got the injunction, blah, blah, blah. Then the hospital took it to appeals, and they lost the appeal that they could not remove her from life support, and then the girl died. But here's the thing. Obviously it bothers me that the child died, and it's tragic to lose a child. But I think what bothered me is the hypocrisy of this. Okay, this happened in Texas. Now, we know Texas is a conservative state. It's a red state, and they always talk about the right to life and anti-abortion and blah, 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 right? But look at this case. Who are they giving the right to life to? The hospital. It turns out the law in Texas says that when a patient is declared brain dead, it's the medical facility decides when to turn off the machines, not the family, not the parents, not the husband, not the wife, et cetera, et cetera. The medical facility gets to make that choice. How is that a right to life thing? How is that religious? And you see, this is why when you hear talk about abortion, it has nothing to do with the babies. It has to do with control. It has to do with control over women. They're not worried about the life. Because if they were worried about the life, they wouldn't give a corporation. A hospital is a corporation, okay? A medical facility, treatment facility is a corporation. If they cared about the life, they wouldn't give them the right to choose when your life is over, when to shut off the machines, right? Doesn't that kind of go against people's family, love, you know, all the things that they talk about, right? Family, religion, morality, et cetera, to allow a hospital to decide when your family member, loved one, child, whatever, is going to be turned off. And again, I'm not making that decision. What I'm saying is the whole right to life movement is hypocritical bullshit. It's not about life. It's not about the children, the babies, the abortions. It's about control over women. It's about control. It's about telling you what you should do because we believe for whatever reason, you know, and this is just an example of it. How are the Right to Life people not up in arms over this? That a hospital made the decision to turn off the ventilators on a child? That they had to go to court? That you have to go to court to fight for your child to now, again, I don't know. I'm not pretending to know what the diagnosis is, a long-term diagnosis, or whether the child's going to live or die. Nobody knows that. Nobody knows what's going to happen. But to allow the hospital to make the decision rather than the parents, sounds a bit hypocritical to me. There's just so many. There's so many stories. There's so much bullshit going on. I can't keep up. Let's go to Georgia, shall we? The gubernatorial election in Georgia. This is unbelievable what's going on with the voter. You know, and again, this is where I say, okay, I'm stumbling around. I'm backing up. Blah blah blah. But I heard a quote recently. I was actually doing this political comedy debate show, and it talked about Eric Holder, the former attorney general, who said that Michelle Obama's wrong and that the Democrats better learn when they go low, you go low. And this is why. This is why Republicans win elections, because they don't take any chances. The gubernatorial election in Georgia, as you probably know, the Republican candidate is Brian Kemp, who also happens to be the Secretary of State, which happens to be the office in charge of voting, voter registration, et cetera, et cetera. He's running against Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams is a black woman, the first black woman candidate to be for governor in Georgia. Okay. So first we heard there were, I don't know, like 50,000 people removed from the voter rolls because some weird law about they're not sure if your signature matches the signature on the box or whatever. So basically, your right to vote is taken away, and then you have to prove that your signature matches. Now, here's another one. 107,000 voters were purged from the rolls because they decided not to vote in previous elections and or they failed to respond to mailed notices from the state. Now, who do you suppose those 107,000 voters are? Republicans? I don't think so. You know who they were? The last election that 107,000 voted for? Yeah, 2008. Yeah, who do you suppose they voted for? Barack Obama. That's interesting. That's interesting. People who voted for Barack Obama 10 years ago are somehow being removed from the voter rolls because they didn't vote often enough since then. The man who makes the decision is a man running for governor. He'll also be the one, and this is amazing, but if there's some discrepancy after the election, he's the guy who makes the decision. He's the Secretary of State. He will not be removed from this. He is not being, you know, nobody saying, well, it's wrong for him to have the job, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the law was written because some people move and people die. And if you died, you should be removed from the voting roll because, you know, they're worried about voter fraud, which, by the way, doesn't happen. Numerous studies showed there's no voter fraud going. The 7,000 immigrants headed toward the border, they're out to get you. You know who they're sent by the Democrats. They're coming to vote in it. No, they're not. It's okay. But that's why they have this law, because people die and people move. And if you move, you got to re-register when you get to your new address, et cetera, et cetera. That's what this rule law is for. But this is quite simply voter suppression. It's so obvious and so simple. A number of absentee ballots are being rejected. Okay, they've tossed out hundreds of absentee ballots because they say the signatures don't match. Georgia has a thing that if it doesn't exactly match a government database, you stop the registration, even if one letter is missing, et cetera, et cetera. Happens to me all the time. My name's Alonzo. On a lot of things, they spell it Alonzo with an S. It's an honest mistake. It could happen. Your names could be similar. You could have a Renee, maybe with one E versus two E's. I don't know. But whatever it is, you're not voting, assuming you're from a Democratic area. Now I'm quite sure if you're from a red area, if you're from rural Georgia, well, we ain't that picky about spelling around here. But if you're from Atlanta, you better spell it right. So this is what Eric Holder was talking about, and this is what the Democrats must learn. You got to fight dirty. You got to fight because they're fighting dirty. What better way to win an election than remove all the voters who vote for the opposite party? So the Democrats have to figure out how to do this shit. It is shit, but you got to get, what is this? I'm not from Georgia, but I'm sure they have some saying that's appropriate regarding pigs in mud and getting dirty. Just saying, insert your pig mud getting dirty saying right there, and Democrats learn to do it if you want to win this election. Speaking of elections and Democrats, right? That this is one of their long-term plots, no doubt. So we have a pipe bomber, an attempted pipe bomber, a terrorist. I don't know. You know, I mean, there's numerous ways to describe this. Okay, as you know, and if you're awake, if you're asleep, whatever, you know about this. There have been numerous, quote, suspicious packages sent to people. George Soros, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Maxine Waters, John Brennan, Eric Holder, Debbie Wasserman, Joe Biden, and Robert De Niro have had these suspicious devices, perhaps pipe bombs, incendiary devices. They've had, you know, the glass shards and the nails, various shrapnel in them, mailed to them. Now, each one, they've all been caught in the mail by various security forces, etc. What do all of these people have in common? They're all people who have been called out by name, at these insane Trump rallies, from Barack Obama not being an American to Hillary Clinton lock her up to Maxine Waters described as having a low IQ to you know, on and on. They've all been accused of some nonsense in it. No, but here's the thing with Trump followers and Trump rallies. These are angry people. These Trump followers are angry people. So any logical person, right, would say, there's something going on when everyone that he's called out by name has received one of these dangerous, suspicious, possible bomb, whatever packages, right? That's what anyone would say. No. What they're saying is, you got to love the right. What the Rush Limbaugh crowd, the Sean Hannity crowd, the fake news crowd, the blah, blah, blah. What they're saying is that this is a plot by the Democrats. This was done by the Democrats to help the Democrats in the midterms. So they caught the Democrats. I'm a Democrat. They caught us. The plan obviously was, back in 2015, start these Trump rallies, start these incendiary Trump rallies and call Barack Obama, you know, do the birth certificate thing to Barack Obama and say that Hillary should be locked up. And Eric Holder was like importing assault rifles from Mexicans or something like that. I don't know. And of course, Soros was financing the whole, and you build that. And then in 2016, this is the Democrats, this is part of their plan. They keep building it, and they hold these Trump rallies, and they focus on inciting racism against Mexicans and misogyny and grab her by the pussy and who cares and lock her up and blah, blah, blah. And they somehow raise this level of anger and hatred amongst the, quote, working class whites to get Trump into office. And they get Trump in office and they keep holding these rallies. And at every rally, they talk about that the head of the CIA is part of the plot against them. And De Niro is terrible and blah, 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 blah. And it was all leading up to this, to get somebody. And we don't know who this person is, but we'll get somebody so riled up and so angry and so crazy that they'll start sending bombs to leading Democrats and leading liberal people, all so we could win the midterm election. What a brilliant plot by the Democrats. What a load of bullshit by the right-wing media. All this talk about the left-wing media, the mainstream media, this and that. Why can't they simply say this is horrible? Why can't they simply say this is domestic terrorism? This is domestic terrorism. You're sending bombs to political and social leaders, and it, God forbid one of these bombs blew up and killed people, whether it be the target or people in the post office or security people or whatever. The good thing is whether the bomber is doing it as a threat and not intending to blow people up, or the bomber doesn't know how to make a bomb, one way or the other, the bombs aren't getting to where they're going, and they're not working. They're not really, I don't know if they're, yeah, they're not, they're, they don't have the right fuses list. They're not going into detail about why the bombs don't work, but they've stopped them, and the bombs don't work, thank God. And does it have to do with Trump? Yes. Okay, some people, well, he didn't say do it. No, but he's incited an angry base, and we know there's a lot of crazies in that base. I said it on Twitter. I'll say it right here, right now. I'm waiting for the NRA to say the only way to stop a bad guy with a bomb is to get a good guy with a bomb. How come you don't have a bomb? You should be carrying a bomb for self-defense. Don't you love your family? Then why don't you have a bomb? Oh, man. Megyn Kelly has shown her racism. No surprise. Nothing to see here. Listen, a few years ago, Megyn Kelly said to some kid who wrote a letter, "Don't worry, Jesus and Santa Claus are still white." That she's from Fox News. You know who she is. This is the thing about these racists, whether it be the experiment of putting Rush Limbaugh on ESPN or Megyn Kelly on NBC and MSNBC. They can't hide who they are. They can't change who they it's just a matter of time. So Megyn Kelly said that, you know, hey, what's the harm with a little blackface at Halloween? Who cares about wearing blackface? Forget about the history of minstrel shows and things like Amos and Andy and the horrible stereotypes of black people portrayed by white people in blackface throughout the history of the United States and the Jim Crow era, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's just fun, right, Megan? It's just a little blackface. So she was, the next day they got on her. She did it. She said it on the Today Show. She was hosting the third hour of the Today Show. The next day, people, Al Roker, Roland Martin, et cetera, kind of explained history to her. They said that she felt horrible, and she looked like she might cry as she gave her bullshit apology. And next day, NBC fired her, cut her loose, she's gone. So she will, her agency dropped her, and people are stepping away from her. They're surprised she's a racist. Could have asked me, I'd have told you years ago. But anyway, she's going to collect between $25 and $50 million, the payoff of her contract. She's got a lawyer, they're going to negotiate a settlement, blah, 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 blah. This America, racism pays. 25 to 50 million. That is a good, solid NBA career right there. Good. I'm not even going to say good for her. It is just, this is where we're at. This is where we're at. Let's go to Florida, because why the hell not? Two Florida stories. Okay, we've got Florida police, and there's video of it, Coral Springs, Florida. Two officers are holding down a 14-year-old girl, and one of them starts punching her in the side. And he said they had to do that to make her comply after she was resisting arrest. She's a big girl, but she's also a 14-year-old girl. These are two adults. She's laying down on her stomach. You can see it in the video. You can see it in the picture. So I don't know how hard it could be. There was trouble at the mall. The security guards called. There were some unruly teens. This girl, I guess, was scrapping with the police officer. But now you can see in the video, she's held down, knee in the back, arms pinned behind her, and he's throwing punches into her side. Good cop. Tough guy. Tough guy right there. Also in Florida, there was a city commissioner, Michael Dunn. He has an Army-Navy store. A guy was shoplifting a hatchet, so he just pulled out his gun, blasted the guy, put a few shots into Mr. Lopez. Now, Lopez, the guy who did have the hatchet, he had it under his shirt because he's not a very good shoplifter. And when he walked out of the store, it fell out. The store owner claimed he was raising a hatchet and trying to kill me with it. You know, the hatchet that fell to the ground. And so he fired a few shots into him, and he said he was standing his ground. Well, amazingly, the state is rejecting that defense, and he's going to be charged. He's going to be charged with manslaughter or second-degree murder or whatever you get charged with, because, you know, standing your ground doesn't mean just blast the nearest person of color. Well, actually, it does mean that. But apparently, there are times when you can't just blast the nearest person of color near you. So, it's good. Good, Florida. Now, let's move into horrible. And this story, if you've seen this video, this is hard to watch. If you haven't seen the video, I'm not going to recommend that you Google it, because it truly is hard to watch. In Independence, Missouri, it's a 13-year-old kid who he's on the autism spectrum, so he can function. If you could see that in the video, he's not severely autistic, but obviously there's something wrong with him. There's a couple of kids, they're beating on him. They're telling, now these are all white kids. The autistic kid is white, bullies assaulting him, they're all white. They're yelling at the kid, kiss my shoes, nigger, kiss my feet, nigger, kiss my feet. They keep calling him a nigger. They keep saying, kiss my feet. They're punching him. They're bullying him. There's a group of kids around. They're doing all this on video. One of the kids pulls out a gun and puts it to the kid's head. And now they're pointing a gun at the kid, and they're punching him, and it's calling him, nigger, kiss my feet. Who the fuck are these people? How horrible can you be? The mother saw the video. She took the video to the police. Initially, she said, and this is unbelievable, she said that at first, this is quote, at first they didn't seem concerned about what happened to her son. He really said that they're just minors. There's not a lot happens to them. They may have to do community service, and I should just keep Darren away from there and keep him at home. That was the police initial response. Keep your kid at home. Your kid was beat up. A gun was put to his head. And their response was keep him at home. Now, once the video went viral, then the police were like, okay, we got to arrest him. They found the kids doing it. It was a couple of 17-year-old punks and some other kid that I don't know what you do to these kids. And they're talking about how bad the parents of the bullying kids must be, et cetera, et cetera. What the fuck is wrong with us as a society? How are we at this point? How does this happen? I don't know. I honestly don't know. This was, and you know, I see a lot of this shit, and I got a lot of cynicism, and I got a lot of comic cynicism in this, but this was truly horrible to watch what this kid's going through. And you know, the psychologists, et cetera, saying this will scar him for life, and who knows, you know, I don't know if this could, 10 years from now, maybe this kid becomes super angry and violent. I don't know. Nobody knows. The mother was losing it. And what mother wouldn't? Can you imagine? Can you imagine being a mother watching your kid get punched and beaten and a gun held to his head? Look, I beat up a kid when I was in high school. I felt horrible about it. The worst thing about it was when my mother found out and I saw how much it hurt her that I beat up a kid. I don't know if I ever had another fight after that. I felt terrible about it. That was nothing like this. That was nothing like this. This is, I don't know. I can't describe this. Not for the faint of heart. Thank God they got the kids. I hope they do the right thing and try these kids as adults and throw their ass in jail. And throw them in jail with grown men. And let them be on the other side of this. Because these are, yeah, that's, ugh. Okay. I'm laughing because I don't even know how do you get out of a story like that? That was just a downer. I got no funny on that one. But here's some fun. Mega Millions. Okay, the lottery, we were watching it grow. It grew to $1.537 billion. They said that if you take the lump sum payment, it was over $900 million, enough to buy a professional sports franchise. As much money, that's how much money Jay-Z has. There were all kind of comparisons to what $900 and some odd millions. Here's the thing. We don't know who won, but the ticket was sold in a town called Simpsonville, South Carolina. I can guarantee you $937 million is enough to buy Simpsonville, South Carolina. They don't know if it was someone passing through Simpsonville who bought the ticket or someone who lives there, but someone has enough money to buy the town where they won the ticket. Just saying, something to do. Change the name. It's not Simpsonville. Your name is Richards. It's Richardsville. Your name's Johnson. It's Johnsonville. Whatever your name is, you now could just buy a town in South Carolina. How'd you get this town? I won the lottery. What'd you do? I bought a town. Good for you. Good for whoever. Somebody's going to be happy. Listen, I don't even know. I'll tell you this. I have a friend. She is a promotions manager at Sapphires, which is a strip club here in Vegas. And we had lunch, and she was telling me about this business and how big the business is. And they have these rooms. They call them skyboxes. And what you do, you know, it could be a bachelor party or whatever it is. You rent the room. You hire the girls, the dancer. And it's not prostitution. These are dancers, not prostitutes, okay? $500 an hour per girl to dance on the pole in your room. Then they sell liquor. And she said they have bottles that cost $90,000 a piece. It's some kind of super rare champagne in a giant bottle, blah, blah, blah. She said that they've had that. They've had guys drop, you know, a couple of $100,000 at a strip club. I can't imagine it. But if I won $900 million, whatever it is, that might be the party to have. That might be fun. She said the record was some guy kept the room for 27 hours. I don't know how much he spent, but you might want to break that record if you got that much money. I don't know. God bless whoever won. Good for them. They're going to pay some taxes. I don't think they have enough time to get into that, you know, tax dodge thing and get the Trump tax cut. I don't know how that's going to work. They's going to pay some taxes. And you know something? I think if you win $1.5 billion, you shouldn't give a shit about how much taxes are on it. I'm not even going to go into McConnell saying that they're going after Social Security. We already knew that. Finally, and this was just fun. This is, speaking of rich, you know, if you're in the 1%, right? If you're super rich and you have that life, you might want to keep it to yourself. You might want to just not tell people how great your life is. There's a woman, her name is Melania, imagine that. Melania Edwards, and she's an executive for HSBC. It's a bank, and she's a Silicon Valley this employee. So this is she did a thing of what her day is. She starts her day at 5:30 a.m. She gets up that early so she can meditate. Then she chats with some friends and family. Then she goes off for a game of tennis, okay? Then she has some fruit, and then she goes to work. Now, she did this. She put this on Twitter, her normal day. So she goes to work. She lives in one of the poshest parts of San Francisco. There are a lot of hills, so she has to wear sneakers to walk to work. She gets to work at 9 a.m. At 10:30, she meets with tech companies. When she says meet, it actually means that she's going to Starbucks and talking with these tech guys. Then it's lunchtime. Lunchtime, she's gets a 90-minute lunch to eat her salad. There's a little meditation involved. Then she gets back to work. She's sitting on the roof chatting on her phone. She's showing all this in the course of her day. Then she heads off to Palo Alto. And Palo Alto, she meets some other people in the coffee shops, blah, blah, blah. Then it's she studies a little at Stanford, then yoga, then dinner with her boyfriend. That's her day. People on Twitter trashed her as what, you know, this is not, this is, it, good for her. Listen, good for you. If that's your workday, if you're getting paid millions of dollars by some big bank or tech company or whatever it is, and you get to wake up and go to yoga and play tennis and then go to work for an hour and then go out to breakfast and meet with people and then have a 90-minute lunch and, you know, do yoga in the afternoon. Great. Good for you. Don't tell anyone. Stop bragging. You know why? Because there's people out there who work for a living. And that, now, here's the thing, okay? I don't work hard. In a way, I do. I do what I do, and I love what I do. But I tell people all the time, they pay me to travel. I tell jokes for free. I'm going to give you a travel day with Delta. I've since been informed that Delta stands for don't ever leave the airport, which might be true. Sunday, I had a flight at 9:27 a.m. from Vancouver to L.A. I had carry-on luggage. No need to get to the airport early enough to check luggage. I have Nexus, which allows you to pass through customs pretty quickly. So it generally takes me about a half hour to get through check-in and customs on an international flight. So I plan to leave my hotel at 7:30 in the morning, be at the airport at 8 o'clock for a 9:27 flight. Figure it takes me a half hour to go through. I'm at the gate an hour early. Plenty of time. I get a text from Delta at 7:08. Your 9:27 flight is now going to be an 11:30 a.m. flight. We rebooked you on an 8:15 a.m. flight. There's no way I'm going to make an 8:15 flight. It's 10 after 7 and I'm still at the hotel. So I call. It's a tip for people. Listen, never go to the airport and get in line. Call the 800 number. It's on your frequent flyer card, or you can get it online. That's the way to rebook. It works faster. Trust me, I've been doing this a long time. I get booked on a flight at 11:12. I go to the airport. I go through customs. When you go through customs at an international airport that has, you know, Canada and a lot of airports have U.S. customs officers in that country. So you go through customs. So now, in effect, you're in America. Not you're in America, you're clear to when you get off the plane, you just walk in. You don't have to go through customs at the U.S. airport. The disadvantage of that is once you go through, you can't go back. I can't walk back into Canada and just hang out. I'm stuck there until I fly out of there, right? This is how that movie Terminal went with Tom Cruise. So my 11:12 flight gets pushed to 12:54. Mind you, the corresponding connecting flight from Seattle, I'm flying Vancouver to Seattle to L.A., corresponding connecting flight also has to be moved back. My 12:54 flight becomes 1:20 p.m. 1:20 p.m. becomes 3 p.m. At some point, the 3 p.m. flight just got canceled. Now I'm looking at leaving at 3:54. Now, it's not even noon yet, and they're telling me I'm going to get out of there at 3:54, at which point I've kind of lost confidence in Delta. So now I'm looking online for other flights. I find a flight on Air Canada, which I can book through United, my other frequent flyer airline, that leaves at 8 o'clock at night. I book it as a backup. You can cancel within 24 hours for free. So I'm like, I'll book it. If Delta gets me out, I'll just cancel the other flight. My 3:54 Delta turned into a 5 o'clock Delta. The last flight Delta had out of Seattle to L.A. was at 8 p.m. The 5 o'clock flight would get me to Seattle at 6. I could make the 8. Wait a minute. The 5 o'clock flight has just become a 6:12 flight. So now I call Delta. I say, I've given up. I want a refund. Delta says, okay, we'll give you a refund, but we can't tell you how much. We'll email you. We'll let you know how much we're going to give you. I ended up flying out on Air Canada at 8 o'clock that night. I spent 11 hours in the airport. That was a day. So Silicon Valley yoga lady, not really feeling you. Not really feeling you. That's what I do for a living. It's not always like that, but it's like that often enough that I know how to deal with it. Okay, that's it. Who's paying attention? Number 230 is done. I didn't have time to get into the Lakers and how after the third game of the season, people were like, LeBron's the thing is a failure and we need to rebuild the whole team. Baseball, it looks like the Red Sox are going to win the World Series. There's still hope for the Dodgers. I'm hoping for the Dodgers because you know me, anyone but Boston. I don't know. People, I thank you for listening. I thank you for being out. I truly do. I'm surprised and always appreciative of the love I get on this podcast and on things I do. December 3rd is going to be the new special. I'm working on it. I'm trying to do something great with that. I thank you for the support on everything I do. Remember, Man Overboard, the CD is out there. You can download it on iTunes. You can buy it on Amazon. Alonzo Bowden, Man Overboard. I promise you, that's funny. Don't make any mistake thinking that one's not funny just because I'm doing something new. This is what I do. I love it. Thank you for listening. Thanks for laughing. Good night.